On a Wednesday, April 2nd, this is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt, sometimes known as Dad.
Oh, yeah.
Dada.
Oh.
Daddy.
Is that what she calls you?
I would love to be Pop someday, actually. Mm-hmm. I feel like that makes you look tough.
Yeah.
That's my Pop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've earned Pop yet, but maybe someday I'll get to Pop level.
Mm-hmm.
But look, parenting, it's just one big revolving door of different anxieties, mm-hmm. including probably the biggest one of all, am I doing it right?
Yeah, no manual.
There's no manual for how to raise a kid. Mm-hmm. But if you go online, Cherry, you will find people that purport to give you a manual.
Mm-hmm.
And they have different labels, different names for these different parenting styles. But one that's really big on social media right now is called gentle parenting.
Gentle.
And we don't want to essentialize too much, but mm-hmm. it basically tells you to understand your child's emotions and tantrums through the lens of how they're feeling, why they might be reacting that way.
Mm.
And don't punish, don't do incentives and disincentives, but try to sort of talk them through whatever they're going through.
Talking through.
Now,
okay.
And I'm essentializing here because mm-hmm. we're going to dive into this much mm-hmm. more later in the hour. But the big topic today is gentle parenting and parenting in general.
Yeah.
And we have a question for you. How were you parented? And what do you think is the most or least effective parenting style? Give us a call. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube and you're a Studio Tuber, you can drop a comment right there in the chat.
Hey, Tater Tots. I look forward to hearing from our listeners on this one because we've all been parented.
Yes, we help. We all have.
Whether you're a parent or not, you probably witnessed other people parenting. And if you're a parent, it seems like it's not easy. Every day you got to get up and every day you're worried and hope you're doing it right. And so looking forward to hearing from folks.
I will affirm it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
What if I told you, nah, it's easy? Why are we even doing this show? It's so easy.
You'd be like, then tomorrow will be hard. That's how it is. Every day is different.
True.
So,
that's true.
Yeah, but we have our trio of news stories.
Yeah, start us off, CG.
So, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. We talked about him on the show yesterday. Well, guess what? He set a new record for the longest speech on the floor of the U.S. Senate on Tuesday night after he lasted more than 25 minutes. Hours.
Mm.
He surpassed the previous record set by Strom Thurmond back in 1957. Booker took the floor at 6:59 on Monday. He began his speech. He kept going and going and going. And then finally at 7:18 on Tuesday, and I say 7:18 p.m., he surpassed Thurmond and he finally yielded the floor at 8:05 p.m. He added 48 minutes to that record. Now, during the time, you can't go to the bathroom.
That's crazy.
You're on the floor. He was joined by various Democratic colleagues who asked him questions and engaged in conversations with him, allowing him to rest, take a sip of water while maintaining control of the floor. And Booker said he was motivated to do it because his constituents demanded that he do something, anything, and to show that he heard them. He put their stories together and read them on the floor. But he said he did get weary. And toward the end, he decided to also break the Strom Thurmond record as a statement. Take a listen.
To be candid, Strom Thurmond's record always kind of just really irked me that he would be the longest speech, that the longest speech on our great Senate floor was someone who was trying to stop people like me from being in the Senate. So to surpass that was something I didn't know if we could do, but it was something that was really, as we got closer, became more and more important to me.
And by the way, Strom Thurmond was a segregationist and he was fighting against the passage of the Civil Rights Act or Civil Rights Bills. And by the way, a lot of people heard this. Tens of thousands of viewers tuned in on social media to watch Booker's speech. I think his speech topped about 300 million likes on TikTok Live.
It's a lot of likes. A
lot of likes.
Did you watch it?
I did. I watched pieces of it.
Yeah. I tuned in at the end, which is rare for me because mm-hmm. when I get home, usually it's like, no news, no politics time. But I was curious how he would end the speech. Like, you've been flying this plane for 25 hours. What do you say to cap it all off? And he did a nice job.
Yeah.
It's also an amazing physical feat, I have to say.
Yes. And he looked a little weary. That was his interview on MSNBC, like right afterward. Like, he looked a little weary. Yeah.
How long could I just stand up, even without speaking?
Yeah.
Just stand up. You know, you can lean on the lectern or whatever. I think I could do like 8 or 10 hours.
Yeah.
But he's a former football player, by the way, Cory Booker. Yep. So he's
built
for
this. And he runs and all kinds of stuff. By the way, someone on my Facebook timeline wrote, how did the 25 hours of speaking impact your life? Said it. I heard sarcasm in that post.
Yeah, that's definitely sarcastic.
But that person got dozens and dozens of comments, including ones that said, it made me watch the news for the first time in months. So people were paying attention. And another person said, acts of resistance in and of themselves don't change everything, but they can lead to everything changing. So people heard it. It cut through the noise. And at least for some of these folks who made that comment, you know, they heard him and it felt like they were being heard.
Story number two now.
Yeah.
So this is going to come back to Philly, but we're going to start in New York City.
Okay.
You've heard about this congestion pricing debate in
New
York City?
Yeah. I heard about it.
So New York recently implemented this system where they charge cars and vehicles that enter a certain part of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
They charge more during the day, less at night. It's called congestion pricing. And I should say, it has had the effect that people wanted it to have, which is that there's far fewer cars driving into Manhattan. And
so it worked.
So it worked on that level. And the money they raise from the tolls goes to pay for upgrades to public transit.
Mm.
Sandy Smith, writing in Philly Mag, suggests that Philadelphia do the same by tolling the Schuylkill Expressway and then using the money to shore up SEPTA, which has these huge budget problems. So what do you think? Congestion pricing in Philadelphia. I can already hear people screaming yes or no on the other side of this broadcast. What do you think?
Well, full disclosure, I do not take the Schuylkill and I avoid it at all costs.
Okay.
So there's that.
Well, there's going to be a cost in this scenario.
But apparently the same suggestion was brought up 20 years ago and people laughed at it. But I will say this. People are kind of used to paying tolls and tolling technology is so easy.
Well, we pay seamless now.
Yeah, it's seamless. You don't even have to get out of your car. You can put it on your credit card. We do it to go to Jersey.
Yeah.
We do it to drive through Delaware. We're doing it on 476. Why not on the Schuylkill?
I'm intrigued, I have to say. Well, at base, you have to understand what we're trying to do here, which is that there is a behavior, driving, that I think we all want to disincentivize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Driving, first of all, cars make the city less pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
No one even likes driving into the city, so the people that are doing it don't like it, and it's bad for the environment, right?
You laid out the arguments.
So you do want to disincentivize that, and you want to incentivize its replacement, which is getting on public transit.
And public transportation would be there.
That said, I have no idea if this would work. Like, absolutely none.
But you know
I
what?
Do think people would
you
have, like,
a good job
pitchforks. Yeah. I just, you know, people don't like tolls, taxes, whatever you want to call them. It's always a hard sell. But Sandy Smith, good on you for having the courage to at least bring this up. Maybe it starts a conversation.
And by the way, definitely worth talking about. And thank you, Sandy Smith, for the story. I followed Sandy Smith on X and on Threads after reading that story.
And that's a transition.
Speaking of Threads. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
God. This next story, this is going to be a tough one, folks.
Yeah, Philadelphia councilman.
I'm keeping a straight face. Go ahead.
Is in the hot seat this week for some of his interactions on that social media platform, Threads, that I just mentioned. Apparently, he was replying to accounts featuring photos of scantily clad women. Now, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, Councilman Jim Harity used what appeared to be his at one time public Threads account to interact with profiles with the names like Chubby Girl Stacy, Eva.Facts, and Naughty Kate Nasty. And the accounts had not been communicating with him specifically, but had likely, according to reporter Max Barron, simply showed up in his feed based on the Threads algorithm. Yet Harity took it upon himself to reply. He said, hello, to a post of a woman in a bikini with a picture there. And in response to a thread that said, can I DM you on Insta? He replied, yes. And of course, when the reporter called him up and asked about the responses, he made the account private. He also said that he thought the folks were constituents trying to get in touch with him. Later on, he said he realized it was a scam.
But it's not a scam. They weren't.
Or scammy.
It's not. But so basically, he's on social media and he cannot tell the difference between someone trying to reach out directly to him and someone just posting publicly. So he was responding to these public posts from what we would call porn bot accounts.
Yes.
Just to
clarify.
According
to the reporting.
According to the reporting. I mean, look, I don't want to judge anyone for interacting with any account on social media, but to not know the difference between those two things when you are in a job that requires public communication in a social media age is surprising, alarming. Would you agree? To not know the difference? Like, I don't care if a normal person doesn't understand social media, fine, whatever. But you've been elected to city council. Like, you should know the very basics of how social media works and what direct communication is and what public communication is, and that people can see that you're replying to these accounts. He seemed to think this was private.
I guess so. And by the way, prior to being called out, his posts were mostly just about work on council.
Right.
It was just the replies that gave a red flag. And by the way, if you don't know who Jim Herity is, he's a Democrat. He lives in Kensington and he's been pretty open about his rough and tumble past. He's in recovery and created an unusual path to council. So I wonder if his constituents will even care about this.
Oh, I'm not saying they should care. I just think there should be some basic social media training.
You're right.
If you are in this type of position, his job is to communicate with his constituents in the 21st century. And he seems to have no understanding of just the rudiments of how social media works.
Social media can get you in trouble, right? It really can.
Which would be a fine thing to say 20 years ago, but you should be familiar with social media, I would think, at this point.
Yes.
In time.
Yes.
Am I being too strident here? Is that too much to ask?
That is not too much to ask. And I don't think he thought people were checking threads out. I rarely do, but now I do.
Okay.
Well, that being said,
let's be gentle with you.
Yes. Jim. Our main topic of the day is gentle parenting. And before we dig into it, let's hear from some parents who spoke to our producer, Andreas Copes, at the playground in Franklin Square. Take a listen.
Definitely yelled at and spanked a lot. We try to do things a little differently, try to be as patient as possible and speak kindly. My name's Lauren and I'm from Pennsylvania, I'm from Philadelphia.
If you give them a firm structure, then within that, they have a lot of freedom to do what they want, guide themselves. Probably a little more structure than when I was a kid. I was the youngest of four, so freedom to kind of do what I wanted. Drew, and I'm from Philadelphia.
All right.
Now, every family, as you just heard there, is different. But parenting styles have been given a long list of labels over the years. There's authoritarian, authoritative, lighthouse parenting, permissive. The list goes on. A recent approach, very popular with millennials, has become huge on social media and pretty controversial.
It's called gentle parenting. It's a style that encourages parents to tune into their child's emotions. Are they sad, angry, overstimulated, tired, anxious? Even hungry. By looking at the big feelings kids can experience, gentle parents turn to breathing exercises, talking it through, and physical touch like a hug instead of timeouts.
This video here from TikTok creator Opal Wells is an example of gentle parenting when compared with more traditional discipline. Let's give it a listen.
Quit screaming at me. You will stay in here until you have calmed down. Here, let's get you someplace safe while you calm down, okay? Here, I'll stay with you. It's okay to cry. I know. I know that's really hard. Yeah, I'm here for you.
Gentle parents say there are a lot of misconceptions about their philosophy, that they let their kids do whatever they want with no consequences and don't teach respect or boundaries. And people who are critical of the style say that the style results in less resilient kids, because while mom can respond to your feelings in the moment, the world may not.
So we're going to bring in a guest now who can help us unpack what gentle parenting actually is. Dr. Annie Pizzala is a visiting assistant professor of developmental psychology and family studies at McAllister College and joins us via Zoom. Annie, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And for you, our listeners at home, we want to hear from you. Our question of the day is this. How were you parented? What do you think is the most or least effective parenting style? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And for those of you watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your question or comment in the chat.
Annie, I wanted to ask first why gentle parenting has caught on. Like, what do you think is drawing people to this philosophy?
I think that gentle parenting represents a new way of parenting that is very distinct from the ways that people were raised themselves. And I think during the pandemic, when we were more isolated and perhaps when there was a heightened sense of despair about our world, I think gentle parenting represented something very appealing for parents and their young children as a more compassionate, and I mean, the best word that's coming to mind is a gentler approach for children that was more adaptive.
I wonder, can we, is there an academic understanding of what this is? Because it seems like it's pretty new.
It is new. So about 10 years ago, a British author named Sarah Ockwell Smith, she wrote a book on gentle parenting, and she's now written about a dozen other books. She's considered sort of the founder of the gentle parenting movement, but never did she define what this approach meant in an, like as an academic myself, I've always wanted to know what's the operational definition of this approach? What does she actually mean? In some ways, Ockwell Smith has described gentle parenting as a vibe, as an energy.
A vibe.
But you know, to understand exactly what the correlates are of this approach, what are the outcomes of it, we need to actually define it first. And so my colleague, Dr. Alice Davidson, and I, we did a study 2 years ago on the gentle parenting phenomenon, and we asked parents all across the United States, tell us about your parenting approach. And for those who said, I'm a gentle parent, we had follow-up questions with them, and we said, what do you mean by that? And then they gave us long definitions that Alice and I then coded, we analyzed in order to sort of distill down to the essence of what gentle parenting seemed to represent from these parents themselves. And what we found was gentle parenting seems to be an approach that really emphasizes emotion regulation in the parent and in the kid. So it involves a lot of emotion talk. And it also involves a lot of affection, either physical affection, so lots of hugs and kisses, or lots of verbal affection. It's a very talk-heavy parenting style, really, in some ways, kind of cerebral, very heady, a more intentional parenting approach.
So what does that look like in practice?
Well, it's really diverse. The parents that we studied in this piece that was published a couple of last year, there were parents who were sort of the stereotypical permissive parent, in that they were extraordinarily compassionate and warm and did not want to discipline their children at all. And that there were other parents who looked more like classic authoritative parents, high in warmth and high in structure. And so I think that it's important to acknowledge that, this is a diverse ideology, and that there are many parents who are adopting this label, ascribing it to themselves. But in the moment-to-moment interactions that they're having with their children, they look really different.
Is
And
that
in
un
fact, we coded, oh, forgive me, go
Yeah, but
ahead.
I'm curious if that in its of itself is unusual to have like a parenting style that emerges seemingly from the grassroots as opposed to from the academy.
I think it is. And it was actually hard for us to get this piece published because a lot of other academics thought this hasn't been validated along Diana Bomrein's parenting typology, the authoritative, authoritarian, permissive styles. They kind of held, a lot of academics held their nose at this approach because they thought it was a here today, gone tomorrow kind of a thing, that this is just an Instagram phenomenon. But as an academic myself, I think we need to be a part of these conversations. If we are not a part of them, we can't understand them. And so I think it's deserving of our attention, and it is unique because it was not born of scholarship. It seems to have been born of the primordial goo in
It's social media, really, right?
social media.
That's amazing to have a parenting style that sort of emerges not out of thin air, but just out of the community of parents that exists online. And that, I think, gives you a peek into the future of parenting. But we're going to talk about this a lot more on the other side of a quick break. So stay with us, Annie Pizzala, a visiting assistant professor of developmental psychology and family studies at McAllister College. Stay with us, listener. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman, Aaron. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the pros, cons, and misconceptions that surround gentle parenting. We've been speaking with Annie Pizzala, a professor of developmental psychology and family studies at McAllister College.
And we're bringing in a parent now. His name is John Gustin. He is a social media creator who uses the handle The Tired Dad, and he has millions of views on Instagram alone, and his content about gentle and conscious parenting has clearly struck a chord with folks. John Gustin, Tired Dad, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you look
I'm excited to talk.
You look so refreshed, I have to say.
You don't look tired.
You don't look tired. So where does that come from, Tired Dad?
Well, the reason I don't look tired is because I drink a lot of coffee. And,
cheers to that.
I do cold plunges and stuff, you know. I know the big craze on social media right now is dunking your face in ice water. So that's how you can stay refreshed.
Yes, I love it.
I am curious, John, what drew you to the parenting style that you've embraced, whether you call it gentle parenting or anything else? Like, what was the motivation for parenting how you parent?
The whole word gentle parenting, you know, that gets the people going. But for me, it's conscious parenting. It's just a little, it's more effort. And that's why I'm tired, is because we're giving more effort into parenting. So it's a lot to do with emotional regulation with yourself and how you respond to your children, because children can be extremely overstimulating. So it's taking that step of stepping back and kind of assessing the situation. And instead of being so reactive, you kind of understand that your child's going through something. You know, they don't know how to regulate their emotions. Adults have trouble regulating their emotions.
Sure. That is true.
So, you know, it's just a little more effort into parenting and understanding your children and not just being the authority. Yeah. There is that aspect, but it's beyond that.
And I wanted to ask you, John, like, how were you parented and how does your parenting style differ from that?
Well, I was born in 1985. I grew up with 90s parents. And I know the joke is they left the note on the table, like, here's lunch is in the fridge, you're good to go. But I had a lot of freedom. I was the youngest of three. My older brother and sister were 8 years older than me. So there was a lot of, you know, I was getting babysat by my older sister a lot. And I was walking to school myself in third grade and home. And I had, authoritative parenting. Mm. So my family wasn't, the emotions were lacking, for a better word. But, you know, both my parents worked, so they were gone a lot. And, you know, I think in that era of parenting, it was, you know, as long as your kids were behaving, you're doing a good job as a parent. And I think there was a lot of misconceptions about emotions, and it wasn't talked about a lot, you know. I think there's so much intentional parenting now. I think maybe because of all this information and these platforms and everything. But me and my wife always talk about, like, do you think our parents, like, game planned like this over the dinner table about what we're doing wrong and stuff? And I asked my dad and he said no.
So give me a sense of, like, how you approach, you know, a common problem like a tantrum. Let's say a tantrum, maybe even in a public place. How do you approach that scenario? What type of information do you try to gather? How do you react or not react?
Yeah, so my reaction is, depending on if it's my daughter or my son, I know how to react to both of them. If I react strongly to one, it's going to make the situation worse, you know? And it depends on the level of tantrum, right? There's mild tantrums that can be, like, talked through, And then there's level 10 tantrum where we have to go outside and talk about it. But let's say it's like a level 10 tantrum, which I had with my 5-year-old son recently at a restaurant. I had to take him outside. I sat him on a bench. I let him kind of, you know, have his tantrum for a minute. And then I kind of just talked him through it. Sometimes if I start joking around with him, him being young, it kind of makes him laugh and it kind of separates ourselves, you know, from that emotion. And then once he calmed down, I told him, you know, he can't act like that in there. I think it was because he wanted to sit by my wife and it was causing a disruption or whatever. He didn't like to be told no.
Yeah.
So I just kind of explained it to him. And then we calmed down and we went back in after about 5 minutes and he was fine.
Yeah.
So it's just internally, I wanted to just be like, we're out of here. We're done, you know? But that's where the emotional regulation on my end comes from. So I need to like step away from it and go, okay, how do I calm this situation down? Because if I start losing it, we're all screwed, you know?
And so, Anna, you heard all of this. Is this pretty typical? I want to give you a chance to respond. Also, is this pretty typical when you hear this, when we talk about gentle parenting? Is this what we're talking about?
It's a good question, Cherry. And I think that the diversity of this parenting style, it doesn't allow us to answer that question in a tidy way, right? Like I don't actually think that there is necessarily a typical gentle parenting approach. John, I think like you are to be applauded because you are so mindful and so self-aware of your own emotional response. And that is it's so good for your kids to see that kind of modeled, especially when they're having a hard moment or many hard moments. But I would say that there are many gentle parents who would be way more lenient than John and many more gentle identifying parents who would say, oh no, we're out of here.
Right. It's a spectrum like anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me read this comment from one of our YouTube watchers, Artist Not Not, who says, I think it's easy to criticize gentle parents because the people who criticize are the same that could have learned a little empathy. Gentle parenting isn't the only or best way, but at least it tries. But I want to get you out of here on this question, John. What is your goal with this parenting style? Like, what do you hope it results in for you and your kids?
Well, I think, you know, it's easy to be the authority figure as a parent. And I think parents could use, well, if they respect me, if they listen to me, if they obey. And sometimes that can just be, well, they're obeying because they fear you, not because they really respect you. So there's a fine line there. I want my kids to always come to me, always. As they get older, my goal is that they always communicate with me. They tell me everything. If they're having a hard time, everything. And they're not scared to come to me because of my reaction. Hmm. So that's my goal, me and my wife's goal, as they get older.
Yeah.
And I also want them to be in tune with their emotions. So I want them to express themselves, be extremely expressive, be unapologetically themselves, and not care so much about what other people think or anything like that. And I think I have a responsibility as a father to model that for them. Yeah. So I always say children are terrible listeners, but they're great imitators. Yeah. So we can tell our children to do stuff, but are we showing them? If we're telling them to respect others, how are you on the road when somebody cuts you off?
Yeah.
Right. So that's
thank
my
you
goal.
So much, John.
Yeah, thank
Dustin,
you for having me.
AKA the Tired Dad on Instagram. Thank you so much for being on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we're asking you out there, mm-hmm. how are you parented? What do you think is the most or least effective parenting style? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop your comment in the chat. Michael on YouTube says, my wife and I fit into this approach, and we started it before social media came out. Listen to your kids, guide them, consult with them about certain decisions, give them lots of support and love. But is there a downside to that, Jerry?
Yes, and that's why we have another local parent who's going to join us now. Her name is Elizabeth Matthew. She's a writer and mom who recently authored The Case Against Gentle Parenting in Law and Liberty. Elizabeth, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so, Elizabeth, lay out your argument. You're very skeptical of gentle parenting. Lay it out.
Thank you so much for having me on. So I think that gentle parenting is a really difficult term because, of course, when people say it, they mean different things. Mm-hmm. When I refer to gentle parenting, I am not referring to an idea of gentle parenting as simply not being reactive or having corporal punishment or anything like that. I'm all for parents being not overly reactive toward their children and obviously, I'm certainly for having discipline as a teaching tool, not as, you know, an angry punishment or reaction. However, the tenets of gentle parenting really are twofold. One is the idea that feelings are the core of who we are. And the other is that when an environment does not suit your child, so for example, say your three-year-old has tantrums at the grocery store, the correct solution is not to habituate the child to not having tantrums in that environment, but to eliminate that stressor by simply not bringing him or her to the grocery store.
And what do you think is the long-term kind of detriment of that approach?
Sure. I think it makes children more fragile because I think that it fails to habituate them to the reality that, in fact, feelings are always going to be there, and we often have to act in ways that cannot, in the moment, indulge those feelings. So I have four children, and I obviously care tremendously about their feelings, and I want to connect with them in those ways, but that is not how I parent them to function in the world, because the world's not going to care about their feelings, and they're not going to be able to self-regulate all the time. Instead, they're going to need to exhibit self-control, which means acting in a way that is habituated to, appropriate behavior, even when they do not feel good about doing that.
So what is your response to those who say gentle parenting is just trauma-informed parenting?
Yeah, so my response is that I don't think we're seeing that as the result. I think that the gentler parenting gets, the more we're seeing mental health crises, the more we're seeing children having issues regulating and behaving well in school. Just the other day, a teacher mentioned to me, gentle parenting is ruining my career because the children in her class do not instinctively and habitually behave. And the reason they don't is because they have parents who have not inculcated that.
Hmm. And you mentioned something so fascinating earlier, that you're disturbed by this idea that circulates in the gentle parenting community that emotions are at the core of who we are. So if emotions are not at the core of who we are, then what is?
So actually, I'm disturbed by the idea that says emotions are the core of who we are.
They are, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think they are at the core,
but they're not everything.
They are not themselves the core.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is virtues are more important than feelings. So the typical idea today, and you see this everywhere, from gentle parenting to the content that surrounds it, like Daniel Tiger, right, is a great example of when the tiger, cartoon tiger, this is a very popular preschool show, when he's angry, it's like, oh, you know, when you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to four. And the idea is that by the time you count to four, you won't be angry anymore, and you'll be able to behave in a way that does not display anger. I think that's really unrealistic. I think there's a higher calling, which is to behave appropriately and reasonably toward others and not hit them or kick them or act out, even though you may be enraged in a given moment. I do not think you are going to be able to have the idea of self-regulation work with preschoolers. I think self-control comes first. Self-regulation is later.
Yeah. But there's something, though, don't you think, Elizabeth, that, you know, parents being able to control their emotions? Because I think a lot of these gentle parents were traumatized by parents who may have been very authoritative and not been able to control their emotion. Is that part, a valid part of this parenting style?
So authoritative doesn't mean unable to control your emotion. Authoritative just means that you are both loving and strict. Authoritarian is parents are, you know, in charge and the emotion is all that matters and how parents feel dictates everything. So I think, first of all, it's really important to be clear about that term because authority and authoritativeness are, I think, absolutely the key to parenting well-adjusted children. And data show this. Mental health in children from the most conservative and authoritative homes reveal that those are the most well-adjusted children in our society. That said, authoritarian parenting, where a parent admits to no dialogue with children, obviously has significant drawbacks. I am actually very sympathetic to the reasons why my fellow millennials have been sort of
drawn to gentle parenting.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we were parented in an increasingly anomic world where there was less extended family and fewer adults around. And so when one adult, particularly a parent, might have been emotionally reactive toward children, it really hurt our feelings in part because there were not other adults around all
the
time.
Yeah, they're the only anchor in your world. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, we have to let you go because we've got folks on the line and we want to make sure everyone has a chance to respond. But great perspective there from Elizabeth Matthew, a writer and a mom and author of The Case Against Gentle Parenting in Law and Liberty. Elizabeth, thanks so much for the time on Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So I guess I wanted to give now Dr. Annie Pazala a chance to respond to all of this. Like, you've been listening. You're the researcher. You're somewhat detached from this conversation. I'm just curious, like, what in all of that stood out to you?
Gosh, I mean, Elizabeth, I think, is so well spoken, and I think she has a really powerful argument and one that merits our attention. You know, I actually was drawn to study gentle parenting for a couple reasons. One, because it seemed like it was all over social media and everybody was talking about it, and it seemed like something weird that I wanted to explore. But I also was curious to explore whether or not there was a connection between some of the behaviors I was seeing in my own college students as a college professor and perhaps the ways in which they were raised. I had just finished this great book by Jonathan Haidt called The Coddling of the American Mind. Jonathan Haidt has also recently published a best-selling book. It's The Anxious Generation. It's sort of a continuation
this
of
is
that
the smartphone
story
book,
of,
right?
Exactly, yeah. All the smartphone book. Put down your smartphones, all ye teenagers. But Haidt's thesis in both of those books is that we are not doing our children any favors by coddling them and by... I mean, I think he starts his book, The Coddling of the American Mind, with the very powerful adage that we should prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child.
Right.
And I think Elizabeth Matthews, in what she was saying about, you know, if your child has a tantrum someplace, it is perhaps, it may be serving them well in that immediate moment to, you know, kneel down with them and give them lots of hugs and love and understand why it is that they're feeling so distraught. But in the long term, are you simply removing the obstacle for that child and not giving them the skills to navigate other hard moments? Are you preparing the road for the child instead of the child for the road? And so I have been curious, and this will not endear me to my college students, but I have been a little bit concerned that some of my some of my college students have been raised in such a way that they have been coddled a little bit. They have not been allowed to experience the normative hard knocks of life, because of the ways that they were parented. Now, I should say, and I'll be real brief, but my research right now is just looking at the parents. I'm actually not studying their kids. And I think one of the reasons that my work has sort of gone viral is that I was able to illuminate that these gentle parents are not doing so well, that they scored in our in the research that we were doing quite low on parenting self-efficacy, and we saw themes of burnout among a lot of these parents who said
Because it
things
is so
like, "I'm
intensive,
reading all the parenting books, I'm listening to all the podcasts, and I don't know what I'm doing."
And I wanted to just ask you some, because I know that there are some cultural, socioeconomic, and issues or differences, I guess, between parenting styles. And I was just thinking, you know, based on your, I guess, your life circumstances, you parenting is about survival for some for some young people, and you may not have the luxury of being gentle. And so I want to sort of talk about that because it is a privilege to be able to be a little bit gentle if your kids don't have to be in environments where, you know, it could be about their safety issue. And can you talk about where the line is when it comes to gentle parenting when you're talking about survival and safety and other things?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, one of our hypotheses right now is that the gentle parenting phenomenon is one that is limited to a pretty privileged demographic of parents who have the resources, whether that be time or money or just a, you know, a good night's of rest, or even, I mean, I loved John's perspective, and the fact that he is known as the tired dad, and he's tired because he's working hard, but you know, he's got access to ample amounts of coffee and he's doing okay. I think that for a lot of parents, this whole notion of spending time helping your child process their emotions when maybe they spilled the gallon of milk on the kitchen floor is a luxury, and a lot of parents, they don't have that. We are replicating our study with a more diverse sample, and we so to be determined as to whether or not we find fewer gentle identifying parents in a less privileged sample, but that's my hypothesis
There's a
that this
couple.
is a limited phenomenon.
Sorry to cut you off, but we are short on time. So I want to get two more calls in. Let's start with Diane from Elkins Park, who's on line one. Diane, we're a little short on time, but what is your perspective that you wanted to share on Studio Two?
Hi, thank you for taking my call today. Yes, I'm a grandparent of three grandchildren who have been gentle parented. My daughter has not been gentle parented. I raised her, and my husband raised her to be, you know, to be self-regulated, to know self-control, to have boundaries, more or less authoritative parenting, where we spoke to her and explained to her why she did something wrong and why she didn't do it right. And there were some limitations when she misbehaved as far as time out. But what I'm seeing with my grandchildren, especially when they come and visit me, you better batten down the hatches when they come in the house. It's all hell bar. They'll touch everything. They'll say anything. There is, we feel that they're not teaching them the skills to survive in this world.
No boundaries, yeah.
No boundaries at all. No regulations. They swear. They curse. You know, it's just total chaos.
Yeah, thank you so much for that perspective. That's Diane from Elkins Park. And now I want to bring in, I think, a differing perspective here. This is Corey Dyer Mastroianni, who is on the line, a mother of three from Philly, I believe. Corey, so give me a sense of your parenting style and sort of your reaction to this conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's really interesting to hear the different perspectives, especially generationally from, you know, baby boomers to millennials, et cetera. And my perspective is that, you know, you kind of take what's good from all of the different styles. I think gentle parenting definitely gets a bad rap and also is a bit of a misnomer. So I think there's a lot of great skills and things to implement that aren't necessarily gentle. It's more listening and taking into consideration how the child is absorbing things and experiencing mm-hmm. things and kind of hearing what they're, how they're reacting. But by no means should it be, you know, resulting in chaos. I think the boundaries are really important, and keeping, you know, structure and routine is definitely crucial. I think it's more of language used on our end, and kind of that's how we practice our version of parenting is, you know, instead of, you know, for example, limiting them to the ways that I was parented to, you know, in for example, we're going through, you know, going through the day and, you know, they're having lunch, right? And they are maybe not wanting exactly what we put out. You know, we don't want to make a whole different meal just to appease them. Mm-hmm. But we say, you know, let's be a scientist. You know, let's, is it cold or is it hot? You know, engage them in ways that are just a little bit
different
versus, mm-hmm. you know, oh, you don't like that? Sure, I'll make you mac and cheese. I think there's a balance.
Yeah, there's always areas of gray. There's always a gradient. Thank you so much. That was Corey Dyer Mastroianni from Philly offering her perspective. Appreciate you coming on Studio 2. And just as we wrap up real quick, I just want to ask you, Annie, like, what are the things that we know do work in parenting that do matter? Divorced from this whole conversation around gentle parenting, what's something that parents can do that we know from research really does matter in a child's life?
Yeah, thanks. You know, I'm writing a book right now about those very things, because I do think that in the midst of all of the noise that is especially on social media about gentle parenting or lighthouse parenting, panda parenting, I feel like every day there's going to be a new style that's advocated for us.
Yeah. And real quick as we wrap up.
Yeah. Your one thing.
Four things. Kids need structure. Kids need warmth. They need to be seen as individuals, mm-hmm. and we need to be there for them for the long run.
All right. Four big things. If you hear nothing else today, those are the big four. Thank you so much to Annie Pizzala, visiting assistant professor of developmental psychology and family studies at McAllister College. Appreciate your time and perspective.
Yes, very rich conversation. Thanks to everybody who wrote in. And thanks to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Paige Mary Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producers, Kevin McCrory. I'm Cherry Gregg, alongside Avi Wolfman-Arendt.